The Residential Tenancy Act has it went through the House in the last month, and it passed through third reading on Tuesday. So everything that we're going to tell you is very new, and it's all stuff that we haven't had a whole lot of time to do a lot of analysis on, and also is going to be largely contingent on regulations being put in place. So this act is going to, the regulations on terms of how they implement the law is going to be really important in terms of the impact in some places. The basic premise when the government rewrote the act was to put the act into plain language to make it more understandable to your average tenant and your average landlord. And that's certainly something that TRAC's been calling for years. And Sylvia is going to give some summary around it. We've got some concerns about whether or not they've actually accomplished that. And we think, like with any plain languaging exercise, you really need to go out there and get it reviewed by tenants and landlords in this case, get it reviewed by people who don't speak English as their first language, and we think that's one of the things that's really lacking here. I don't want to take up too much time because Sylvia's done a really good job putting together a summary of the major changes that we see coming with Bill 70, which was the Residential Tenancy Act. But just to give you a quick idea of the process, the rewriting and modernizing of the Residential Tenancy Act was in fact a New Era promise. It was in the BC Liberal Party's New Era document, so it was one of their election promises. Last winter, last December, they released a draft of the act on the internet, and they hired a consultant, and one of their staff people met with some key stakeholder groups. So we did meet with them back in December, and we gave them a brief highlighting what we thought were the major things that needed to be done to modernize the act in a way to strengthen the act for tenants. And quite frankly, a lot of that came down to maintaining some of the things that we'd fought long and hard for, maintaining half a month's security deposit, maintaining the system of rent protection, putting in place a new system of arbitration that would ensure greater accountability and consistency, and some other things like that. And there's a copy of our brief on our website if you're interested in looking at it. The consultation process was really having the act on the internet and then saying that anyone could put forward submissions or comments by the end of December. No, sorry, the end of January. So it was on there for just over a month. Apparently they received over 1,400 submissions, which is pretty amazing. Many of them had to do with the very hot issue of pets and rental housing, but many of them also had to do with all of the other important aspects of our lives that are touched by the Residential Tenancy Act. And then we heard nothing, really, quite honestly, until a couple of weeks ago, on October 30th, the act was introduced into the House. The process of it took actually quite a long time to get through the House in the committee stage, where they go through it section by section. We sent information over and 27 amendments that we wanted to see. And unfortunately, none of the government MLAs picked up on our concerns, but the opposition did a very good job of raising concerns and speaking up for the rights of tenants in terms of what kinds of impacts this legislation was going to have. Sylvia is going to go through a summary. Just to reiterate that this is not in force yet, and we're not sure how long it's going to take for them to put the regulations together. They could put the regulations together and put the act into force all at once, or they could do it piecemeal. So they could decide that the rent protection is really important section for who they see as their constituents, and they could decide to put the regulations in place for the rent protection system faster. We don't really have a sense about that yet. Hopefully we'll get more information and get a better sense in the next few weeks and months, and we'll certainly be doing our best to inform you about the changes. So this is, again, the first time that we've been through this, so bear with us if we're a little rough around the edges, but I think Sylvia has done a really good job of putting together a summary for you here. So I'll pass it over to her.
It's just a summary, and we put together the good things and bad things, so they're all mixed in. The overview, basically, altogether, we find that the new Residential Tenancy Act, or Bill 70, is an erosion of the tenants' rights. The act is not written in plain language. And the sections, the good things is the sections are better organized in the new act. You actually have a copy in your binder, And also you have a copy of our summary itself, which is a little bit more detailed than our overheads here. Now, the outcomes really depends of many sections, depends on the regulations in the end, but also the guidelines, how things will be interpreted. And there are certainly some issues with the enforcement, and again, we see then with the regulations if that's going to be strengthened or weakened. So a lot of things will kind of wait and see. Now, who is in and who is out? It's pretty much the same. We are very happy to see that, for example, prospective tenants are included now, where before they were excluded, and I'll explain later on why we're glad about this. Something we have got a little bit concerns about is, of course, tenants in supportive and assisted living situations, they are excluded. All students' housing is excluded right now, so also students which live in houses or in apartments on the campus, they are excluded right now. Before it was only dormitories and specific accommodations. Now, something we have been calling for a long time, that's the manufactured home pads. People who rent the pad only but own the manufactured home, they are now separated, so they have their own Bill 71, but they still will access the same arbitration system. Now, I mentioned earlier that prospective tenants are included, and the reason why is, in the new Act, a landlord can no longer charge application fees or fees to screen tenants, so this is a positive thing, especially in Vancouver. Tenants at times pay up to $100 just to apply for an apartment, never mind if they're going to get it. So that's good. So that's an avenue. It will be also, it could be enforced now too, hopefully. A landlord cannot charge a tenant guest fees or overnight fees, which is an issue around SROs. So again, we have a little bit of concern about the enforcement. We have to wait for the regulations. If a tenant pays cash, the landlord must now provide a receipt. Again, well, how do you enforce it? That's going to be a big issue. Do I just go to arbitrator and say I have paid the landlord $100 and didn't receive a receipt? So how did I still prove I paid actually the $100 without the receipt? So anyway, tenancy agreements. The landlord must provide a tenancy agreement in writing and a copy. Again, how it's going to be enforced. There's going to be a changes before. In the current Act, if a tenant did sign a tenancy agreement, they were able to enforce a copy, that the landlord must give them a copy by actually they were able to suspend the rent. That's no longer in the Act right now. So that, again, maybe it's in the regulations, we don't know about it. So there's going to be an issue around enforcement with it. Tenancy agreement must now state the landlord's and the tenant's legal name. It must have the address, emergency phone number, and an address where the tenant can serve the landlord in the agreement. So that's very crucial, because quite often it's hard to find who is the actual landlord and where they are. So that's good. And a new thing is currently in the residential tenancy agreement, the terms have to be reasonable. It has been changed to unconscionable. Now, plain language. Well, I'm not going to say anything else, but obviously the test for unreasonable is going to be higher than just reasonable. So, deposits. There's going to be a change to it. Currently, a landlord can charge a half a month's security deposit. That stays the same, but if a tenant has a pet, now the landlord can charge on top of it half a month's pet deposit. Plus, extra deposit for keys or garage door openers, things like that. Now, my concern is if people lose keys, then they have to pay another deposit, things like that. So there's a lot of things coming up, especially people who are low income. If they have a pet, a lot of people won't be able to afford a pet deposit. So there's a lot of questions around that. So the key deposit is not quite set at what's the level is of the amount. So we think it's probably around $100. That's kind of what we heard from Rich Coleman, right? Moving in. There have been some changes too, good changes. The landlord and the tenant, they must make a move-in inspection together now. And I do believe the government will actually post the form on the net, or we can where people can download the form. And the landlord must provide the tenant with a copy within 7 days. Now, there is a drawback. The landlord has to make 2 attempts to do a move-in inspection together. If the tenant fails to show up these 2 times, whenever they were set by the landlord, then basically they lose later on their rights for the deposit. So just right off the bat when the tenancy starts. Now the same thing, if the landlord is not doing the moving inspection report or doesn't show up for the agreed time, it's the same thing for the landlord. They lose the right for the deposit. During the tenancy, there is some additional changes. The quiet and enjoyment is now explicitly in the act itself. Before it was somewhere at the back, a little bit stated, but now it's really more clear, so that's good. And a tenant who has not paid the rent, it's now also explicit in the act that the landlord cannot restrict access, or they cannot just seize the tenant's belongings. So, and a landlord has now the right to make monthly inspections if they have got some reason that they think that there's a problem, or that, of course, they have to give proper notice. Sorry, I'm not being not clear here, but it's for a reasonable purpose and with proper notice they can come in. Well, that's something we have a concern about, that, you know, landlords can abuse it. Pets. A lot of people were hoping that pets going to be easier to have pets in their apartments. We don't see the way how Bill 70 is written that that's going to change. Actually, maybe even the opposite. Right now, with Bill 70, the landlord actually can prohibit pets, just blank pet, no pet clause. That will be acceptable. They can restrict the size, kinds, and number, where currently it's just a blanket, no pet clause, that may be arguable. So it's a little bit a difference there. We feel it's an erosion, basically. It's less rights for the tenant right now. Now, on top of it, the landlord now can charge a half a month's rent for a deposit. And I guess the government was hoping that with the landlord being able to charge that extra half a month's rent, they will more likely to permit a tenant to have pets, but we'll see down the road if that's going to happen. And again, people who are low income, that really puts a great difficulty on them, because I doubt that the ministry will pay that half a month's pet deposit. Now, emergency repairs, something we have been asking for a long time, is that the electrical systems are included, and yes, that's one of the amendments we managed to get. They are included.
He made it clear that landlords cannot charge an extra deposit for guide pets.
Okay, so, yeah, guide pets are excluded.
Somebody asked for every pet.
Thank you for mentioning that. Okay. Now, this is... next one is one of our big concerns. And, yeah, there is a change to it. It could have gone worse, so let's just say it that way. We're not quite sure the percentage yet, what they think, but it was said between 3% and 4%. So basically, a landlord can now raise the rent up to a set amount, which it's CPI plus a percentage, which we think it's 3% to 4%. That's what we have been told from the government. But again, regulations will say that, and which the tenant cannot dispute. So it doesn't matter if the landlord has not done any repairs on the house or on the apartment. They're still entitled for that rent increase. So we have a great concern about that.
Yeah. CPI, what does it stand for?
CPI for Canadian Price Index. Consumer. Oops, okay, sorry. Consumer Price Index makes more sense. Okay.
Annually?
Sorry?
Yeah, annually.
It's annually set, yes. By federal government, right? It's by the federal government set. Now, a landlord can also seek a rent increase above the amount, but they have to go through arbitration. Now, there's a second part to our rent increase. It's not over yet with the rent increase. the landlord now can also play catch up. So basically, they can up to 3 years. So if they have not raised the rent for 3 years, for example, you were living in a place with a landlord, you got along fine, and you kind of did the odd repairs around it as for the, you know, that they don't raise the rent. They sell the house, and the new landlord basically can raise the rent then and go retroactive for 3 years.
The new landlord?
The new landlord could do that, yeah. 3 years retroactive. Or the current landlord, whatever. And that could mean that a person could get up to 20% rent increase. If you're looking at that, 3 years retroactive, so in the fourth year you can get suddenly hit by, 20%.
So you're telling me if somebody, like say if I went in and I bought a house, like I'm keeping the old tenants, I can say, oh, ask the old owner, how much do you charge them rent so I can up that rent by that much percent?
No, it's retroactive 3 years. So you go retroactive 3 years. So if the landlord has not given the tenant a rent increase for the last 3 years,
uh-huh.
You can catch up with it.
If I'm the new owner?
If you're the new owner, yeah, that's
right. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Old or new one, it doesn't matter.
Old or new, okay.
Yeah, doesn't matter. I mean, the landlord, basically.
Okay.
Doesn't matter if old or new. I just gave that example for
you. Okay, thank you.
So it doesn't go retroactive. Sorry, just want to clarify. Don't worry that, for example, if the rent increase would come in effect today, that now you could get a rent increase retroactive for the last 3 years because you haven't received the rent increase for the last 3 years. That would be from legislation on. So after it's proclaimed, from then on, it comes on, you know, from the 3 years from now, they can play catch up. So, yeah. So right now, it's still the said amount. Okay? That's only if the landlord has not gone up in the past 3 years, okay? Now, if a tenancy agreement states that if an additional occupant moves in, now with the new regulations, in Bill 70, the landlord can raise the rent for that amount, which is agreed in the tenancy agreement. Now, this has to be in the tenancy agreement, so that's something to make people alert if they are in tenancy agreement and they have that clause. It can be costly, as you said, if you have more children. Something we felt it would be only justified if there indeed is an increased cost. But it's not reflecting. Now, something I feel is really unfair is termination of services. Bill 70 states a landlord can withdraw non-essential services, whatever that means. And, of course, the guidelines and the regulations will be hopefully, being a little bit more precise about that. They can give the tenant a 30 days notice and maybe some compensation. So, for example, have small children and I rented a place because the laundry is right there. So the landlord basically could just take that away within 30 days notice and tell me, okay, I'll give you $2, $3 off the rent or $5 off the rent. And that would be probably most likely sufficient. Well, what about my stove? You know, if I have a stove that breaks down, landlord doesn't want to replace it, would be a hot plate be sufficient as a replacement? I still can cook on the hot plates, right? So what's essential? So,
yes. There's a woman in Victoria whose landlord will not provide a fridge or a stove, and she has two small children. Under the Old Tenants Act, could she have forced him to provide that? And could she possibly get him to provide that now,
on the current Residential Tenancy Act, it depends if she rented the place with the understanding there's a fridge and stove in it. If there was not a fridge and stove in it and she had not a particular agreement before the tenancy started, that may be a problem to enforce. And I would think on the new Residential Tenancy Act, they're probably very similar. So it's not so much, this is more when you had that service. If she had the stove and the fridge, and the landlord is taking it away and replaces it by, like I said, the hot plate, for example. Is that acceptable or not?